Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly call. Today is Monday, February 4th, 2026. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern Time. If you're listening over Rumble or YouTube and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on a weekly call for instructions to join us live by phone, app, or browser. If anybody would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right side of the website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on a donation tab on the top right side of our website. Okay, we're going to pick up with some scripture reading. We're in 1 Corinthians, and we'll be reading tonight.
I don't have any questions tonight, so I shouldn't be on very long.
Anyway, we're picking up with a scripture reading in chapter 15, 1 Corinthians chapter 15, read by Alexander Scorby.
Chapter 15. Moreover, brethren, I declare unto you the gospel which I preached unto you, which also ye have received, and wherein ye stand, by which also ye are saved, if ye keep in memory what I preached unto you, unless ye have believed in vain. For I delivered unto you, first of all, that which I also received, how that Christ died for our sins according to the Scriptures, and that he was buried, and that he rose again the third day according to the Scriptures, and that he was seen of Cephas, then of the 12. After that, he was seen of above 500 brethren at once, of whom the greater part remain unto this present, but some are fallen asleep. After that, he was seen of James, then of all the apostles. And last of all, he was seen of me also, as of one born out of due time. For I am the least of the apostles, that am not meet to be called an apostle, because I persecuted the church of God. But by the grace of God, I am what I am, and his grace which was bestowed upon me was not in vain, but I labored more abundantly than they all, yet not I, but the grace of God which was with me. Therefore, whether it were I or they, so we preach, and so ye believed. Now, if Christ be preached that he rose from the dead, how say some among you that there is no resurrection of the dead? But if there be no resurrection of the dead, then is Christ not risen. And if Christ be not risen, then is our preaching vain, and your faith is also vain. Yea, and we are found false witnesses of God, because we have testified of God that he raised up Christ, whom he raised not up, if so be that the dead rise not. For if the dead rise not, then is not Christ raised. And if Christ be not raised, your faith is vain, ye are yet in your sins. Then they also which are fallen asleep in Christ are perished. If in this life only we have hope in Christ, we are of all men most miserable. But now is Christ risen from the dead, and become the firstfruits of them that slept. For since by man came death, by man came also the resurrection of the dead. For as in Adam all die, even so in Christ shall all be made alive. But every man in his own order, Christ the firstfruits, afterward they that are Christ's at his coming. Then cometh the end, when he shall have delivered up the kingdom to God, even the Father, when he shall have put down all rule and all authority and power. For he must reign till he hath put all enemies under his feet. The last enemy that shall be destroyed is death, for he hath put all things under his feet. But when he saith, all things are put under him, it is manifest that he is accepted which did put all things under him. And when all things shall be subdued unto him, then shall the Son also himself be subject unto him that put all things under him, that God may be all in all. Else what shall they do which are baptized for the dead, if the dead rise not at all? Why are they then baptized for the dead? And why stand we in jeopardy every hour? I protest by your rejoicing which I have in Christ Jesus our Lord, I die daily. If after the manner of men I have fought with beasts at Ephesus, what advantageth it me if the dead rise not? Let us eat and drink, for tomorrow we die. Be not deceived. Evil communications corrupt good manners. Awake to righteousness and sin not, for some have not the knowledge of God. I speak this to your shame. But some man will say, how are the dead raised up, and with what body do they come? Thou fool, that which thou sowest is not quickened except it die, and that which thou sowest not that body that shall be, but bare grain. It may chance of wheat or of some other grain. But God giveth it a body as it hath pleased him, and to every seed his own body. All flesh is not the same flesh, but there is one kind of flesh of men, another flesh of beasts, another of fishes, and another of birds. There are also celestial bodies, and bodies terrestrial. But the glory of the celestial is one, and the glory of the terrestrial is another. There is one glory of the sun, and another glory of the moon, and another glory of the stars. For one star differeth from another star in glory. So also is the resurrection of the dead. It is sown in corruption. It is raised in incorruption. It is sown in dishonor. It is raised in glory. It is sown in weakness. It is raised in power. It is sown a natural body. It is raised a spiritual body. There is a natural body and there is a spiritual body. And so it is written, the first man, Adam, was made a living soul. The last Adam was made a quickening spirit. Howbeit, that was not first which is spiritual, but that which is natural, and afterward that which is spiritual. The first man is of the earth, earthy. The second man is the Lord from heaven. As is the earthy, such are they also that are earthy, and as is the heavenly, such are they also that are heavenly. And as we have borne the image of the earthy, we shall also bear the image of the heavenly. Now this I say, brethren, that flesh and blood cannot inherit the kingdom of God, neither doth corruption inherit incorruption. Behold, I show you a mystery. We shall not all sleep, but we shall all be changed, in a moment, in the twinkling of an eye, at the last trump. For the trumpet shall sound, and the dead shall be raised incorruptible, and we shall be changed. For this corruptible must put on incorruption, and this mortal must put on immortality. So when this corruptible shall have put on incorruption, and this mortal shall have put on immortality, then shall be brought to pass the saying that is written, death is swallowed up in victory. O death, where is thy sting? O grave, where is thy victory? The sting of death is sin, and the strength of sin is the law. But thanks be to God, which giveth us the victory through our Lord Jesus Christ. Therefore, my beloved brethren, be ye steadfast, unmovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, for as much as ye know that your labor is not in vain in the Lord.
Okay, Jan, do we have any questions tonight?
No, John, I did not get any questions this week.
Okay. All right, well, the queue is open. It's star 6 and a 1 to get into the queue if you're on a phone, and if you're on an app or a browser, it should be. I don't know what happened there. Anyway, there was someone in the queue. Let me reset it again.
This is Sean.
Yeah, hang on 1 second. Let me open up queue. Okay, if you can get back into the queue again. I don't know what happened. Someone hit a button there, and we lost the queue. Okay, I see. Okay, we got one person in the queue. If anybody else wants to get in there, star 6 and a 1. If you're on a phone, and should be a button if you're on an app or a browser. Okay, we'll take our first and only caller at the moment. Sean, you got the mic. What state you're from, Sean? I know we spoke before. Your voice sounds familiar.
Yep, it's been a while.
What state you're from?
California. Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead. What'd you say?
California.
Oh, the great state of California these days, huh?
Yeah.
Okay, you got the mic.
Okay. So I'm curious, and I haven't been here for a while, so if you guys have already addressed this, I apologize. But so, you know, ICE is all over the place and a lot of controversy around whether what they're doing is lawful or not. And so I would like to know your opinion, John, on the Clause 1, Amendment 5, where it states no person shall be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime unless on presentment or indictment by a grand jury. Does that cover fornicators, or does that only apply to, card-carrying Americans?
Well, all people have unalienable rights, no matter who they are, no matter where they're from, they have unalienable rights. But coming into this nation illegally is the problem, number one. And also, a lot of these people have been before a judge at some point in time. Not all of them, but a lot of them. It would be insane trying to give them the right of any kind of a hearing other than the fact that, hey, like, they came into the country unlawfully and they need to go home. It's that simple. I don't think it gets any more difficult than that. If that's a punishment to them, and I don't know how it would be a punishment to them, I mean, there are people that have been fleeing, you know, different nations. I mean, way back when, I don't even remember how many years ago, it was quite a few years, maybe 25 years ago, lots of Cubans came over here, and they were fleeing persecution, and a lot of them are still here. Some of them have become citizens. But we're not casting them out. They've been reasonably decent people, although there have been some criminals amongst them, and I'm sure we've dealt with them, maybe, I don't know. But yeah, look, ICE is performing a duty. People have crossed our border, and it is their job to protect that border and prevent those people from coming in or sending them back, and that's the law. They don't need due process because... again, they just need to be returned home.
Correct.
But
and I'm
we have some other people that might want to comment on that, any of the leadership here, but if not, back to you.
I'm saying I'm in agreement. That's what I was hoping you would say. That's my understanding. But it's a huge source of contention out there on the street, even among, you know, our own law enforcement and district attorneys and, you know, whatever other people who think that these foreign invaders are being denied the right to due process under our Constitution.
Yeah, you know, as far as law enforcement is concerned, I think there are very, very few people in law enforcement that would disagree with you know, the law being applied, which is a federal law to be applied anywhere in the United States. One of their jobs is to protect our borders. That's a definite requirement. And I think as far as any kind of a law enforcement that might be, you know, standing on the other side, which is insane in my opinion, I think it's mostly leadership. We do know that there's a Somali sheriff out there, and of course he's standing on the wrong side, but he doesn't even belong here either, I'm sure. I don't know what the status is with him, but in any event, you know, you got this guy down in New York City, and he's a communist, and he put his hand on the Quran. So he's never really been sworn in, because we are a Christian nation, the one true God, the only true God, the God of the Bible. And there is no other God other than false gods, Baal, which ultimately is Satan, of course, behind that Baal and many, many other gods. It's ultimately always Satan. And, you know, the Bible is clear. There's only two spirits. There's the spirit of Christ and the spirit of Antichrist. That is it. There is none other. So, again, we have to really get a common sense back, and that might take a little while for some people. Unfortunately, a lot of people are still sleeping. I mean, I can't believe the things that these people believe. I mean, but they fed the lie. I understand that. Look, I've been living in a bubble to some degree for many, many years. You know, I started waking up about 25 years now. But prior to that, I was in a bubble just like anyone else. I was believing everything the news came out. Back then, we didn't have the internet. You know, you had NBC, ABC, CBS, and a few others, and over time. But, you know, we believed the news. You can't believe the news at all. And once I started to realize how serious it is. We've been living in a fantasy and a fiction that they've created. Mm-hmm. And they've stolen everything. They've stolen our courts. They've stolen our political process. We're living under an oligarchy. You know, we've been an oligarchy for quite some time. And an oligarchy is ruled by a few people behind the scenes. And that's what it's been. I think I could say that... you know, Kennedy tried to get out from underneath that. I think I can maybe say that Reagan tried to get out from underneath that. It looked like it was an impossibility to get out from everything that I started to understand at some point in time. But Trump has been able to pull it off, and we're getting out from underneath that, and we're returning back to sanity. We're going to be returning back to real money. We're going to be returning back to what our founding fathers ultimately put together for us.
Yes, praise the Lord. Thank you.
All right, anything else?
Nope, that'll do it.
Okay. All right, we have one other call. If anybody else wants to get into the queue, *601 if you're on a phone, and app or browser should be a button there. Let's see, it's a wireless caller. 479 phone number. What's your first name and your state? You got the mic.
Can you hear me?
Yep, we can hear you. What's your first name and your state?
My name is Alex, and I'm in Arkansas. This is my first time on your call. I've bought several of your material, your books, common law handbooks, and I'm wanting to learn more about your organization. I've been part of the National Assembly for 4 years, and I've honestly lost some trust in the organization, so has many in my state. As I've been digging deeper into the common law handbook, I'm trying to understand some parts of it, and that is, that the quotated sections in the book where it seems to be quoting case law, like Self versus Ray, I'm having a hard time confirming these quotes from these documents. So I'm curious,
yep,
if these are quotes from this case law, or if this is generic ideas.
No, they're actually case laws. I know a lot of people have said that they have a lot of problems finding Self versus Ray. You know, look at any court decision on the higher courts, not on the trial courts, but on the higher courts, and especially the United States Supreme Court, as long as they conform to who we are as a people, in the sense that the law of the land is concerned, then we hold it up and use that. But we use a lot of our founding father quotes. We use common law logic. We have a lot in all of our books. We have lots of footnotes which lead people out. Most of the United States Supreme Court decisions, or even state court decisions, you know, on a Supreme Court level, the highest level. You know, I get a lot of that from Black's Law, okay? When you look up in Black's Law the meaning of words or phrases, or, you know, just looking things up, you will find some kind of a, usually a Supreme Court quote, and again, it could be a state court also, Supreme Court. But trial courts, they're just self-serving themselves, so when they rest on what they call as precedents, we don't hold any of that up at all. And as a matter of fact, lawyers are taught trial court decisions is a common law. But how could that possibly be common law when we read the foundation of our law is the laws of nature and of nature's God, because they don't hold the laws of nature, and they are not nature's God. They are men making decisions that are self-serving. And they've been making these self-serving decisions for a very, very long time. And that's why people have a lot of problems in the courts trying to get into the courts. These courts don't even have the power or the authority to make summary decisions, not when it comes to the case of anybody opening up a court of record, which is a court that is to proceed according to the common law, the natural law, or on any criminal case. They don't have any authority. No judge belongs in a criminal case, with the exception of to put on their, to come in as a magistrate, put on the magistrate hat, and act as a magistrate. And the duty of the magistrate is just to maintain order in the courtroom, keeping things flowing, moving along, and then exercising and executing the will of the jury and passing that down to the sheriff for execution. And that's about it with a judge inside of a court of law. Judges in equity, which is legislative law, which is also under natural law, the rules of common law, they have the decisions, the ability to make those decisions. They are all appealable, though, also. But they don't have any authority at all in a court of record, which is a natural law court, common law court. But, in the books, all these handbooks have tremendous amounts of footnotes. I'm sure you've seen that if you've looked at these books. They are actual Supreme Court rulings, or they could be coming in, things could be coming in from the Federalist Papers or Founders' opinions and thoughts and ideas. Remember, they're the ones that put this whole thing together. That's pretty much it.
Well, I'm using your material and sharing these books and sending people to your website, and I've got about an average of 6 to 8 people that come to my class monthly, but one person brought it to my attention. A guest came and asked if I've found these references outside of your sources or material, and that's when I started digging into it and looking, and I'm struggling to do that.
Right. Well, Self versus Ray, you should be able to find that by Googling. You can't, I'm pretty sure you could probably find that in Black's Law, but pretty much all of, I wouldn't say all, but pretty much most of the quotes that are coming from the Supreme Court or a court of authority, in other words, an appeals court or appellate court, you'll find that they come out of Black's Law. Black's Law is filled with quotes. They always have an authority for anything that they say. They have an authority. And a lot of the authorities that I might use, generally speaking, is usually for coming up with the meaning of a particular word or phrase to give it the credibility and the understanding of the meaning of the word, so how would to proceed. But common law, okay, is very simple, which is natural law. God said he wrote his laws in the hearts of men. So we know the laws. Everybody knows when a wrongdoing is done. And because we live with each other in the same, particularly, let's say, county to county, because we kind of have a certain relationship or a certain thing about living in one county. I know where I'm at. I'm in Dutchess County in upstate New York. And Ulster County is very different than Dutchess County, and there's Orange County that's very different than Dutchess County. So each county is a little different from each other. But so you to be tried or any kind of thing going on that you have a jury, it should be a jury of your peers, a jury within the people within your county. And people know when a wrongdoing is done. We just know, and we also can figure out how to deal with it, how to fix it. How to restore the injured party, which they never do. They never restore the injured party. They may find somebody, they may put someone in jail, and they'll have the person who's been injured in the courtroom to bear the witness, and then they just throw them out in the streets. They don't get anything. But the government gets money, often on fines and different things, but they never restore the individual. Where in a common law procedure, the individual is to be restored. That's the process and the point of the whole thing, to restore the person that's injured. Now, the other thing about common law is not only that the law is written in our hearts, it's all about common sense, okay? Because that's what common law is really common sense, that which is just and right connected with common sense. So the people in a court of law not only get to decide the facts, they also get to decide the law. They can make the law right up at, you know, the fact that whatever it is, they just make the law up. Ultimately, we are the lawmakers. That's what a jury does. And the jury also has the ability to nullify any law that might be applied upon someone that they don't like. And any law that is applied upon someone that's a man-made law, that can only be done in a court, in a criminal court case, where the person was under under equity. They were under statutes and regulations because they were given certain authorities or whatever the case may be. They worked for a government agency or they were working in some commercial activities on a federal level. That would be interstate commercial activities. And so, therefore, if they committed a crime, the statutes and the regulations that are applied upon them because they agreed upon that, that's called nisi prius, unless they agree. They agreed first to participate in that. But if it becomes, and that's also, that kind of a hearing or ruling takes place in an equity court. But once there's a crime involved, it must move into a common law court. Now, the jurists have the ability to nullify any statute or regulation that a person is being held upon if they're not comfortable with it, they don't think it's wrong, or whatever the case may be. But even the judge, they can't even make a summary decision, but they do because they created new rules. So there's a lot of things that they can't do that they are doing. And that's the problem.
Does this organization assist with building the juries? I notice, I think there's information on your website for classes to help further me in understanding how to get remedy for the people. And that's something I'm looking for. And is that stuff that you'll offer or are teaching counties how to assemble a We the People's jury?
Well, what we are doing is we're building administrations, okay? Let me look at the first page here. First of all, we organized what's called the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury. And that was done, it took quite a few years to go through the process where we pretty much visited every county. Now, we might have done two or three or four counties at one time, but, you know, we would go in just to bring forward the idea we want to bring back the common law, we want to get back to the jury process. We want to get back to a proper political process. But generally speaking, we're there not only to bring the people back into the play, because the people are totally ignorant to this. They don't understand how things work. They don't understand the jury. They don't understand law. They don't understand due process and the way that the court operates. And so we teach people all of those things. But what we are doing is we formed and came to an agreement with every single state came together and created a grand jury within a common a unified state, whatever state they were in, common law grand jury within that state. Then they all got seals. We had addresses for all of them and seals, and then they all came together. And we formed what's called the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury. So we built that process in order to have some strong credibility. And then we've done a lot of federal cases. If you look under federal court cases on the right side of our website, I see you're on a phone, so you can't see my desktop. But on the right side of a blue bar, you got federal court cases. And there's a lot of cases we had, you know, went through. We did a lot of habeas corpuses. We did a lot of non-judicial foreclosure with people that had non-judicial foreclosures that we went to help them, those people out, because that's unlawful. And that would include both by tax or by mortgage, either way. And what has happened is that they haven't. I'm going to get to the brunt of your question in a minute, though. But what happened, though, is that they just ignored us, and they continue to ignore us. And all the habeas corpus, we only had one habeas corpus that had any success. out of at least 100 of them. But this whole thing was done for the sole process in to bring proof, because these cases and the way they acted and the way they performed and the things that they said, or just ignoring us, was all the same whether you're in California or if you're in New York or Pennsylvania or Texas or Missouri. It doesn't matter where you're at. The judges will all act in the same way. That proves conspiracy. Plus, they've closed the doors of justice. Now, what we're doing is we are building committees of safety across America. And it's a little slow going. You know, we need to hit critical mass to really pop really hard on this. But if you go to the right-hand side of our website and you come down towards the end, you'll see there is a list. We've constituted every county in America. There's 3,133 counties in America. And which means we have 3,133 counties that came together within their states, but came together every state, all 50 states. We have also started building the committees of safety. We have 208 of them going at this point in process. And we also are trying to get the courts of justice back. We've been, you know, going after the Supreme Court from a lot of different advantages and positions anyway, and also the federal courts, and we've done a lot of work in that, and they just ignore us. So we've been sending presentments now to this administration, to Donald Trump and his entire administration, trying to educate them in certain areas that we think that they might be ignorant in. But anyway, we're trying to get them to spearhead and help us on this, because and if you listen to what's going on, they realize the judges are corrupt. There's even some talk from all kinds of people, judges got to go. We got to get rid of the bar. We got to get rid of these bar judges. They got to leave, and we got to bring good judges in, people who will obey the law and not overstep their power or authority. But meanwhile, our idea is to bring us back to the way common law should be. You know, we don't need bar attorneys or any lawyers to pull together grand juries. The people have to do that. That's the people's job. So we want to build. We're building administrations and administrators for the juries, whether it's grand jury or trial jury. And we're looking for four individual plus one. Five altogether. Okay, we need a paralegal, which also should be an administrator. So let's say five in every county, and that would be paid positions. We're looking to take the authority and the powers away from the bar attorneys and from the judges, and give it back to the people where it belongs, and then they would orientate the jury. So we are training people to do that. People are taking those positions. You know, we have a total of 1,268 people so far that has stood up for that position as a grand jury administrator. Some of those people have fallen away. I think a lot of them, you know, over time, people, I guess, they get frustrated and upset or whatever, and they just kind of fall away. We have to have patience. We've been at this for a long time, but we have to have patience, and we have to endure. So we're looking to fill all 3,130-some-odd counties with five individuals minimum. In this, you know, you go down to New York City, for instance, you got five boroughs, and it's a high population in all five boroughs. So they would need more than five. But generally speaking, most counties would only need five individuals. So we're training people for that position, and so they would get the job of orientating the juries. And there's a connection between those individuals and the committees of safety that we're building, because every committee of safety will also have to have a subcommittee. It would be a judicial subcommittee. So we would tie that relationship in there with those individuals that are actually had taken on a paid position. So every courthouse, every county court, well, let's say every state court in every county would have jury administrators.
Do you have anyone in Arkansas, a grand jury, someone that I could reach out to?
Well, we're not building grand juries because at first we kind of, in our ignorance, was looking to build grand juries. But we come to realize we can't build grand juries. You know, grand juries come and go. You know, they're around for a certain period of time, and then you bring in other people to take on the job. And, you know, some counties, for instance, they, you know, might have a grand jury come together for maybe a month, but they might only come in one day a week to deal with you know, whatever's going on. It depends on how much activity is going on in that county. And you know, if a grand jury is that busy where they have to be there every day, maybe they'll be there for a week and work on certain cases, and then you'd have to turn over a new group of people, because you really can't hold people up. And it would be a wrongdoing for a group of people to be maintaining a grand jury constantly. We are aware of places in California that does that, and it's run by lawyers, as a matter of fact. And also there's a group down in Florida, a lawyer that's running it down there also. And again, the lawyers are the foremen. And they're under, you know, they believe that we're under Roman law and not natural law. And so that's a major problem, but it's a wrongdoing. But what we can do is build the jury administrators. And the jury administrator's job, again, is to, in some cases, solve problems before they even have to go to a jury, depending on the situation. And as long as the injured party is willing to make an arrangement that something would work to get them restored, and the person who injured them, you know, then we could do something with that and then seal it up in a court. So that kind of a situation is sort of like when lawyers try to make a decision or an agreement with someone that's going up for trial, and hey, look, you're gonna get 20 years in jail. We'll work it out. Take two, just take the plea, you know, that kind of thing. But that's unlawful, by the way. It's definitely unlawful by them, and it would be unlawful by us to do that way also. But we've written up a books for a lot of this stuff, at least for the orientation of the jury. We're working on a handbook, which I haven't gotten back to in a while, but, you know, I'm not in a big rush for that because I still see it's going to be a little while. But a handbook that will be more specific for these kind of problems and situations. So the grand jury, I mean, the administrators is what we need to do, and that brings back the people. It would be separate from the court. It would be separate from the political process. It's just the people. And like I said, five people in every county, one of them needs to be, you know, have some kind of a background in the procedures of the court. So we would need at least one that has that knowledge.
Do y'all have anyone in Arkansas doing that?
All you have to do is sign up. When you came to become a member here, there should have been a question there, but you can also sign up anyway at any time to take on that position in your county. And you don't have to work in your county. You know, if you are closer to, you know, the courthouse in the county or next door to you as opposed to the county you're in, you know, you can go to work in that county. It doesn't matter. That's irrelevant because it's just administrators. And administrators have a lot more power in the sense that, first of all, they can solve problems between two individuals, number one. Number two, they can do research on behalf of the grand jury if that's what the grand jury wants. Or we can empower the grand jury is already empowered, so we don't have to empower them, but we can protect the process and the way for them to get access to whatever information they want. So if they wanted to go into a county building or any kind of a building that might have some information, it's government building, I mean, of course, and any kind of information that they would want, we would make sure that they'd have access to that. We would make the phone calls, let them know the grand jury is going to come down. They're going to ask for a lot of questions. They're going to look in your computers, maybe talk to some people, make way for them. And if they don't do that, then, of course, we can use the court subpoena process and different things to do whatever has to be done so that grand jury can have access to those things on a case that they're investigating. So there's a lot of things, but these people, again, those five people would be full-time work. They'd be working in the courthouse itself, wherever the grand jury administrators would normally have been, but it would be by the people and not by the court system, not by judges and not by lawyers, and definitely not by bar attorneys.
Okay, interesting. Well, I greatly appreciate your time and answering my questions and talking to me about it. I'll look into that, what you mentioned on your website.
Asked also about your state. What state did you say you were again?
Arkansas.
Okay, well, if you come on a blue bar and you'll see directory and you click on directory, you'll get the map of the United States here, and you can scroll down and you can hit Arkansas, for instance, to see what's going on in your county and your state. We have a total state membership is 131 members in Arkansas. We have you guys have 75 counties. All counties have been constituted, and by National Liberty Alliance going through the process to create those unified United States common law grand jury. And the only Committee of Safety that seems to be in process is in Jefferson County. There's an individual, Jeremy, and you can get his phone number. You can talk to him. If you are interested in getting involved in the Committees of Safety, which everyone should, even people that are want to become administrators, they should be involved in there, and they should get on the Judiciary Committee, you know, once you get the committee going and you form the committee. If you want to start a Committee of Safety, there's a link here to click on to create a Committee of Safety in your county. It'll put your county, your first name, and your phone number up there. And if you do that, and you wanted to get the phone numbers of everybody in your county, we can make that happen. We won't give emails because we don't want people blasting people with emails for anything. But we'll give phone numbers where you might want to call people and talk with them and see once what they want to do.
Okay, well, definitely. I'll definitely look for that, and I'd definitely be interested in talking to some other people in my state. So once again, I greatly appreciate you talking to me about it and spending some time with me.
Well, just one other thing before you leave. And again, if anybody else wants to get into the queue, *6 and 1 if you're on a phone. Should be a button if you're on an Apple browser. We have one other person in the queue at the time. So want to get in, now's the time. But just one other thing, you know, I don't know how much you've looked at our website, but if you go under, for instance, the Start a Committee of Safety, okay, and you highlight that, you'll come down, there's about 3 or 4 links down, you'll see handbooks, videos, and tools, okay? And if you click on that, you'll see introduction videos to the Committee of Safety and how to set up a charter, how to set up resolutions, how to deal with your sheriff and meet with the sheriff. We also have a sheriff's handbook. We have educational committee. We have introduction to the political committee. And then we have a tremendous amount of information. We have a lot of handbooks. All the handbooks that are for sale that you have looked at probably on Amazon, we do have these free of downloading in a PDF fashion. So if people don't want to go out and buy the handbook, they can just download that. We also have handbooks on how to create the Committee of Safety, how to structure and put it together, how to go through, with the process of setting up your charter and your resolutions and ideas on how to grow the Committee of Safety in your county and so on and so forth. But it is an uphill battle in the sense that, people have to take a commitment and get involved. And, you know, a lot of people come in and out, and that's unfortunate. They maybe get frustrated or whatever reasons, you know, they just don't put the time in that they should be. But it is our duty. If people expect to be ignorant and free, as Thomas Jefferson said, they expect what never was and never will be. So ignorance is a major problem. So people shouldn't think that they should be able to have liberty without protecting that liberty, because the Constitution can't protect itself, and the Bill of Rights, which is part of the Constitution, cannot protect itself. That requires us to do that. And because we live in a nation with such great potential, okay, we have a duty to give back. And the more that we give back, then the stronger our nation becomes, and the stronger the people become, and the more control we have over those people that we put into office. We put them in office, and we can take them out of office. We can take anyone out of office within 90 days if that's what we really feel needs to be done. It's a matter of walking petitions. I think the only exception might be the president. Other than that, you could take your congressman out. You could take your... Unfortunately, senators are being elected. They shouldn't be elected. They should be chosen by the state legislator, and usually the governor would say he would bring people up for potential senator, and then the legislators have to make the decision and then send 2 senators every state, to Washington. And if those senators are not doing the will of the state, then they can be pulled, yanked out, and another senator will be put in. You know, this is they upset the entire balance of power with the 17th Amendment when they turned the Senate, which had no power, no authority, and they destroyed the balance of power in the Constitution when they turned senators to be elected by the people. The people already had representation, but it was easier for them to control those senators by the people voting for them, in opposed to the state dealing with them. And they've already seized control of the congressional process, and they also have already received control of the Senate process, at least a lot of them. And so there's a lot of corruption, a lot of problems. And all this can be solved by one thing, one simple thing. Maybe it's not that simple. Well, it is kind of simple. But it takes people to make a commitment. It takes the people. The people can fix this problem if they want. They have to step up and take care of things and get things going at the grassroots within their counties. So anyway, I just wanted to share that to you. You look at this page, there's tremendous amounts of information on this page on the processes and procedures and how things work and all these handbooks and papers and so on and so forth.
Okay, well, thank you. Yeah, I'll definitely do some digging. I've dug on your website a little bit a couple years ago. It's been a while since I've jumped back on it, but I've gotten back on recently and done a little digging. I have felt frustrated in maybe some of the organizations that I've been with because of lack of training and motivation on how to deal with certain situations. So, you know, I'm excited to hear that y'all have, it sounds like, more of these training tools or books available. So I'll definitely do.
We have a tremendous amount of training going here. Not only everything that I just spoken about, we have, if you go into Education Starts Here, okay, we have a course called Court Access in the Common Law. That'll teach you exactly how the court system works, how to put your paperwork together, how to file different papers, how to move the court. You know, it's a regular law course as far as court procedure is concerned. Okay, and you know, we also have, for instance, lots of courses. We have foundation study. We have, and you could take these courses. The foundation studies is really a lot of introduction through a lot of videos. Constitutional course 101 introduction. You know, you're tested through that process as you go, and if you want, you can get a certificate at the end. We have a civics course. Same thing, you know, with chapter by chapter, you'll be asked questions, and at the end you can get a certificate if you want. We have government by consent course, we have a militia course, and we have a jury administrator accredited course. Anybody who wants to be a jury administrator, they need to take all of our courses because they need to understand how things work and they need to understand how the court system works. And in order to learn the court system, that one course, which is a 90-hour course, is a court access, you know, and a common law course. Now, some of our courses are free from the standpoint you just become a member and you get free access. I think there are three courses like that. And we have a couple of courses that we request people to be a premier member, and a premier member is someone giving $5 a month or more supporting us. If someone is that poor that they really can't do it, and believe me, I know there are some people that really have a problem because they're really stretching every dollar they have, we'll get them in for free then, because we're all about education. Now, the law course is a 90-hour course. It's a powerful course, and we give the first 3 hours for free, but that is the only course that we do charge a lot of money for. We charge $125 for that. For that course, if you were to go to take the college course, which would be from the perspective of really from the bar attorney's process as far as the thought line is going and, you know, the rules that they hold, and they think that we're under Roman law and all that stuff. We're from the common law perspective. We're on the natural law. But our course, their course for court procedure process is about 60 to 70 hours. Ours is 90 hours. Their course, and this would be going through the bar school, their course for the court process procedure part of the course, they would be charging about $2,600 a credit, and that particular course is 5 credits, so you could do the math on that. I think it's about $13,000. You know, when you go to become a lawyer, though, that's just one part of many other courses. You know, they'll also teach you different things on contract law, and maybe they'll get into equity and you know, different things that people might strike for. So, I mean, when you put all that together, you know, then you've got quite a few things. But we cover it from a different perspective. The rest of the education on our site is pretty much free or close to free, and this is the one course that teaches the court process. So you learn how to write papers, how to file papers, what kind of papers are necessary, and how you file the papers, and how do you put together your case. You have to have causes of actions, and you have to have a wherefore clause in the end of your paper, and you have to know how to move the court, and there are many different forms. There's discovery. We teach through the process of that. So we teach all of that part of the process that you would learn in a course to become a lawyer. For the court process part of it.
Okay, well, awesome. I'm excited to start digging through it, and I'll definitely be in touch with you guys. Thank you very much for all.
Keep joining us on Monday nights, and hopefully you learn some more here, and you can ask more questions.
Well, I appreciate it. What was your name?
My name's John. John Duresh.
John. Well, I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, we're going to take the next caller, and we only got one other caller in the queue. So, Linda from, it looks like from Virginia, you got the mic. Anybody else wants to get into the queue on a phone, *6 and a 1. And if you're on an app or browser, should be a button to get in the queue. Linda, you got the mic. Go right ahead.
Hi, John.
How you doing?
Okay, how are you?
Good, thank you.
I don't know that I'm real prepared for this, but I want to bring up something that I've been ensnared in a horrible situation, and I think, you know, people need to know about it. It had to do with, I attempted to buy a furnace, and my old one was, you know, too old and everything. So last year I went to buy a furnace through Lowe's, and they use ARS. And basically it got all the way up to the point where they were supposed to install, and they ghosted me. They just completely ghosted me. So I was just kind of left.
And that was with Lowe's? I was surprised at that. With Lowe's?
That was with Lowe's. That was with Lowe's,
well,
yes.
Well, they themselves don't do the install, but they have subcontractors.
Right. You know, they use another company. And part of the problem, I think, is it never goes back to Lowe's. It just, you're just, you know, with this other company after that. But
well,
that's not true.
That's not true. I'll tell you why. You know, I was a general contractor for, I don't know, 40 years or so, and done a lot of work. And I used to, you know, in the beginning, I used to go to the, you know, the local lumber stores, but then Home Depot came up, and then Lowe's came up, and you know, you kind of get forced into going there to buy for a couple of reasons. Number one, things were cheaper. And number two, you know, they have a lot more product. And so anyway, my point is I would purchase a lot through Home Depot. And they had a lot of subcontractors that they had with specialties, you know, for instance, with heating or whatever the case may be. It's a heating thing with you. Now, what they do is they subcontract the contractor out, okay, and they sell you the materials. But they have the oversight on that whole thing. If that contractor is...
Well, I want to... That's why I want to discuss this, because things have changed. And that's what I'm going to try to get across. But anyway, fast forward to this year.
Well, did you talk to anybody in the pro desk?
No, like I said, you're with this other company after that. And
no, you're not.
I would have had to go to corporate. Anyway...
No, hold on.
That's not my problem. That's not my problem. I was tossing around maybe doing something about it, but I just never got around to it. So fast forward to this year, and so I'm looking around, and I see this company, and I recognize the name. I said, oh, I've heard of them. Think they're pretty good, you know. So I contact them. And what it turns out to be is unknowns to me. I know you use the term territories unknown or something like that, but it's like a Russian nesting doll. You have this front company who poses as a like a local company, right? And then you have, I found all this out after the fact, okay? But I found out that there's, behind them is this umbrella parent company, and that's ARS. And then behind that, you have this equity, private equity company, venture capital company that does the financing. So I got talked into a no interest loan, which I didn't even really need. But anyway, he said, well, you might as well take it, you know. They're offering it. And I said, is there a no penalty clause? And he showed me the no penalty clause. And I said, okay, well, okay. But all of this started, it originated with the solar scandals out west. And it got so bad that people were filing cases, there was a whole cottage industry of lawyers that grew up around this. So the people were taken advantage of the first time with all the, you know, coercion and entrapment and high pressure tactics and fraud and entrapment, and, you know, that they were taken advantage of the first time, and then they were really having to pay the second time to go to these lawyers to get out of it. And the contracts are written with an arbitration clause. The Minnesota AG filed a big case against them for all of the tactics that they were using. And then there's been other cases, too. There was an arbitration case that was recently won. But basically, these companies are now moving into the high-dollar home, you know, items like roofing, HVAC, you know, stuff like that. And what it is they come and they send an advisor, and he has like a tablet, like a, you know what I mean, like an Apple tablet or whatever. And that's where everything is done. And when he did that, I got concerned, you know, and I said, are you going to give me copies of this, you know? And he assured me, he said, yes, I'll give you copies. Well, he never did. And that's the kind of stuff they do. And the private companies are being bought out by these Goliaths, you know, these global Goliaths.
Well, what exactly is, I understand this whole system, and I'm going to give you some solutions or some ideas.
No,
some
what once do, that happens, once that happens, everything deteriorates.
Yeah, but what exactly is your problem that you need to deal with? Did you get lost into a contract and it's not getting done? I mean, what's going on?
No, what they do is they file a UCC-1 against you. And typically it's against the equipment, but sometimes it can even be against the house, the property. And it's not really, it's filed against equipment, but it clouds the title. And then people are unable to sell their properties. In my case, this is what happened. See, when they were installing, I saw the man with a big ream of high voltage conduit, or not conduit, but wire, electrical wire. And I just said to him, I said, you know, I said, is that Romex? And he said, because I built an addition, you know, I know a few things. And he said, no, Romex is only for outside. And I looked at him like he had two heads, and I said, really? And he said, yeah, Romex is, it's got a coating on it. It's for outside. So later on in the evening, I looked it up and just to confirm it, and sure enough, Romex is only for indoors, like I thought. So I said, oh my gosh, this guy who's running you know, who's...
They have what's called direct burial, which is what he's talking or thinking about, but he's not an electrician, I presume.
Exactly. Yeah, I've got this guy is messing around with my electrical box, and he doesn't even know the basics, you know? And the way they ran the wire was wrong. I could give you all kinds of examples of how it was done wrong. But basically, I figured out they're inexperienced people. I think they might have even been illegals, you know. And I suspect that it may have even been subcontracted to another company. But what happened to me was, because of everything that was done, the high pressure stuff and basically just a lot of chicanery, you know.
Well, pretty much everything you're talking about falls under one umbrella, which I'd like to explain to you. But you know, what exactly are you looking or trying to do?
Well, let me tell you what happened. So I stressed in the beginning. I said I want to make sure that the heat gets back to my back bedroom because it's more than 50 feet. And I said that several times. Well, the system is inefficient because nobody with any knowledge was involved.
Well, who did you contract with to do this? Did you go through Lowe's or you went through a contractor well, they don't even have telephone.
No,
books.
That it was a local company, and they like I said, they were well known. It was privately owned, and when it was privately owned, it was a good company. But since it's been taken over by this evil access of...
A lot of that's happening all over the place.
This is what I want to get across.
What happened
with me was I immediately told them that they said I had to cancel within, it was like 10 days or something. Well, I canceled within 4 days. I contacted them. I said, I want to cancel all documents that I signed.
But hold on. Was there an arbitration clause there?
I'm sure there. I never saw the document. To this day, I have not seen the documents.
Well, you don't have a contract with them then, because contract requires the meeting of the minds, number one, and there has to be a paper that's signed by both parties.
Well, this was on installation was on the 6th of December.
Okay, but what exactly...
On the 10th of December, I told them to cancel all documents that I signed, and I said I wanted the entire system removed.
All right, but Linda, let's get back to the exact problem that you have, because, you know, everything you're talking about, you don't realize this, but it's a lot of the things that you brought up, it all falls under one umbrella. Okay, which I'd like to explain to you in a minute.
I understand that, John, but it's been two months I've been trying to get them to remove the system, and they're just doing every kind of delay and obstruction that you can think of.
You've given them money, I presume, if they did some installations.
No, I didn't give them money because he did that no-interest loan.
Oh, okay, so you did finance.
But I told him when he brought that up, I said, no, I don't want that because they always charge too much interest. I have an excellent credit score. I have all kinds of other offers that I can do for no interest.
Hold on a minute because we're going way
and
too long.
And I can pay for it. That's not the issue.
Okay, listen, Linda, hold on a minute, okay? You got financing that you signed for. You signed the contract for the financing, correct?
Oh, I finally did because he was so high pressure and I was afraid that if I didn't do that, that they would ghost. Oh, you know what else? I forgot to mention this one thing. I found out that this company, this new company this year, is the same company that I dealt with Lowe's. It's just you don't know it until you don't know.
Well,
like I said, it's like this Russian nesting doll. You don't know who you're dealing with.
Let me explain how it works. You know, there's a lot of different contractors out there that aren't connected to anyone. It's just nothing but a ripoff. They collect the money. Sometimes they don't even do the work. They just disappear. There's all kinds of, you know.
There were a lot of postings, a lot of comments about that. Yeah. They didn't even finish it. They didn't do the work.
Let me respond to where we're at this point, okay, and try to make some kind of a point on something you could do. So you signed, let me just say a few things and you tell me if I got it right. You've already signed some agreement for financing, and the financing has come through. Did the money come to you and then to him, or did it go directly to them?
I don't know. I have no idea. Because okay. I canceled the whole thing and but told them to remove the system.
Hold on. Canceling it with the contractor is one thing. Canceling it with the financing is another thing. If they got the money directly from them, I've never even heard of that before, because anytime you get financing, and I've been in the construction field, like I said, for over 40 years, and anytime financing came into view where the client would go out and get the loans, there are two ways that would work out, that they would give the money directly to the individual and the individual would pay the contractor. And that generally is not normal. That's a very rare situation. I've never heard of it where it goes directly to the contractor. They usually do a two-party check. So I'll bet you dollars to donuts he got the two-party check to him, and then they signed your name and their name. Now that's a fraud.
Let me tell you something else. I applied initially online. I don't use my real name online. I only use a fraction of both first and last name. On the contract, they don't have my real name. They have that pseudo name that I use online.
Okay, but the thing is if you have a contract, you have a signature on that contract?
I did sign it, but I noticed that when he was doing that, they had copied my signature. I only signed once. Some document about just, general stuff. They copied my signature on all the other documents.
Have you been getting bills from the finance company?
I got one thing from the finance company about the payment. That was it.
Okay. Let me, about the payment, it went to him then.
Don't forget, I don't have any documents. I don't have anything.
Yeah,
I don't have anything.
But you said that a payment or something went somewhere, I guess, to him, correct?
No, No. I just got an email. They were referencing how to make a payment or something. I have paid no payments.
All right. I'll tell you a couple of things. Number one, if you ever get into a situation concerning construction and they have an arbitration clause, which is the best way to go, an arbitration clause keeps you out of court. But you have to make sure that you have access to people who understand construction. In other words, I've been in arbitration where the arbitrators have no idea how construction life works. You know, they don't know how things happen and how the construction in itself. So you always want to make sure that the arbitrator would be either an engineer or an architect.
There are several law firms that have.
I'm giving you some answers. Forget the lawyers, okay? We're talking about people who understand construction. Because when you go in there and you start debating and arguing situations concerning construction, from my perspective, it could get very, very detailed in different things. It could be site work. It could be all kinds of different things involved there. And you have to have someone who understands the process and procedures.
Yeah, I understand. There's several law firms that handle these cases.
Let me answer.
I'm trying to stay out of that because they are back. They are so loaded down with cases, like 3,000 cases, 1,500 cases.
Let me finish what I'm going to try to tell you how you could deal with this problem. First of all, you have to understand what was really going on. I'm going to take a guess on certain things. If a subcontractor came out or a contractor came out that's different from the person who created the contract or created the agreement, who sold the job, because a lot of what happens, for instance, when I was first in this business, I did a lot of different work, and I would do some roofing, and I'd go to a place that was selling roofing materials, a pretty large place here where I live in my county. And, we would go in there if you're a subcontractor and you'd sign up and they'd give you a job to go out on. Now, they would sell the materials, sell the job, and then they would pay you as the job gets completed. and they'd give you a ticket. You'd go out, you'd work the job, then you'd come back with your with the signed paper from the person who purchased the roof or whatever the case may be, the house homeowner, and then you'd come back, you'd give that signed paper in, and then you'd get your check and got paid for that, and you can do that over and over and over again. They have siding companies that work, roofing companies. They have all kinds of different construction, fields that people will come in and sell. So yeah, sometimes you'll get a national contractor. Or a statewide contractor, and they don't really do any of the work. They just sell the job, and more often than not, they'll work through a roofing company if they're doing roofing. They'll work through a siding company if they're selling siding. I'm trying to explain how this works so you can understand how you can deal with it.
And I'm trying to explain that it's not like that anymore.
It doesn't matter. I'm giving you the umbrella view of how it works and then how you're going to...
They just had a case where it was decided that the finance company was culpable because the finance company was really running things.
And I'm trying to tell you how to deal with your problem, okay? Let me finish the point. Okay, I'm giving you the view on how things work. If you went to Lowe's installs nothing. Okay, they get local subcontractors to do the work. They sell the materials. They will sell the job. They will come out to your house, look at the house, make the measurements, do what they got to do, and then they'll give you a contract, and you'll sign it or not, and they will supply the materials, and materials will be delivered, and then you'll have a contract that'll come up on a Monday morning or whatever you guys agreed to. Then they'd start the work, get the job done, and then move on. Now, there are a lot of problems with subcontractors, and believe me, if Lowe's would, and you didn't buy from Lowe's, I understand that, but I want to make the point on how this works, okay? Now, Lowe's is only, they're only doing the contractor. They're just contracting everything out. Maybe they're making 10% off the job, and plus the materials that they're making 10%, plus they make the material cost because they make profit on the materials anyway. So they make like a double profit on the materials, and then they make the 10% on top of the contractor, maybe 15% or whatever. They try to hammer the contractors down as low as they can get. But in any event, that's how a lot of these systems work. I mean, you get all kinds of companies that do things like this. Now, here's the thing. There's numerous people involved, and you have the contractor, you have the person who did all the contracting as far as you have the subcontracting, you have the contractor who sold the job, supplying the materials, delivering the materials, and they're supposed to be overseeing their job because they're supposed to come out and see the final job and before they pay that subcontractor. Then you got the finance thing. Now, you went through some company. You didn't go through Lowe's or any company like that, but you went through, I guess, some oddball ABC, company ABC, let's call it. Okay, and so that's where it begins. Now you have the sub. That's the second part. And then you have, of course, the financing, and that's the third. You tie them all together, and you sent a notice demand pulling all three together in that notice and demand. Okay, and what happens now is you're suing all three because you're going after. Now, you're not suing them yet. You're in the beginning of a process, and when they get that notice and demand, okay, they're going to realize, wait a second, this subcontractor is the problem, or this is the problem.
Yeah, I need to do a demand letter. It's been almost 60 days. They keep saying they're going to remove the equipment, and then when I say a date, they'll come back and they'll say, we need you to sign some documents first. And I know that those documents are going to hold harmless clauses on them, not signing them.
Yeah, well, you're going to need to understand them, and since you're not a lawyer, you have a problem with that because you may not understand them. But it generally is simple language, and usually the contractors will put them together. And that depends because, you know, sometimes a lawyer,
I'm not worried about my situation necessarily. I have filed, I did a 22-page complaint. I have filed it with the Virginia AG, the Virginia SCC, the CFPB, the BBB, and the FBI. And I intend to file it with several others. So I'm not real concerned about my situation about, you know what I mean, the outcome of my situation. But I am concerned that it's been 60 days. I have no furnace. They've left me held hostage.
Give you the solution without going to court. Okay? You have to define the problem and the situation as best you can in the paperwork that you need to file. But I'm going to tell you, the paperwork that you need to file is called the notice and demand. All three become liable to the whole process. And you got to make your points in that notice demand. To the finance company, I never signed anything. To the contractor, I never signed anything. To the person who sold the job, I never signed anything. Or whatever you signed. However, remember, a contract requires the meeting of the minds. If there was no meeting of the minds, there is no contract, okay? Plus, it's a piece of paper with signatures on it. And of course, you know,
they do it with these tablets, and you can't even see anything. You can't even see anything. And that's why I asked him, I said, are you going to give me copies? And he said yes, and then he never did.
You're not listening. Let me finish the point, because you're going through the same thing, and you're not going to get anywhere with that anyway. The only way you're going to get anywhere is a notice demand to all three parties, all on one paperwork, naming all three, giving the notice and demand, but you have to do it properly. A notice and demand requires certain things, a procedural parts of the, there are certain points you have to cover in that notice and demand. I think it's 8 points. And we have that information. If you go to Education Starts Here and you come down to Law, and then you come over to Court Forms and Process, you'll see a notice and demand here. And notice demand is a generic notice and demand right here. That's a demand for oaths. Let's see. Let me see if I can find the notice and demand. Instructions, forms, okay, challenges. Notice and demand, right here. We have it in PDF and we have it in Microsoft Word. Now, you have to follow the procedure that is in this form, okay? If you download it, you open it up, and I'll open up the Microsoft Word one, okay? And we have instructions on how to go through this process, and then we lay out an example of a notice and demand, what it looks like, okay? But you're holding all three responsible. I'm telling you, one or two of those part of the three-part process, because you have the person who sold, you have the subcontractor, the one that's going to construct, and you have the financing. I'll tell you who's going to jump up the loudest is the financing. They're going to get involved. And also the person who sold the job, they're going to jump up, and they're going to get upset about this, because now those two people are going to be held, or groups of people, are going to be held liable, as much liable as the subcontractor, if they don't do something. And you got to give them notice and serve them notice. It's got to be done notarized paper. It's got to be served as if you were serving a court case, okay, to all three parties. And you got to give them a minimum, you got to give them a time, usually it's 20 to 30 days, okay, 30 days usually, but I think you could do 20. I forget, if you read through this, you'll find out maybe 20 is not a good idea, but 30 is for sure. But you're giving them, and then you're telling them in this, for instance, if you fail to satisfy this demand within the allotted time after having been duly served with this notice and demand, then by tactic proclamation, I, your name, or my nominee, or my assigns, will determine for you the following, that the aforesaid demand is just, that a court of record in New York may enforce the demand either ex parte or con parte, that you and each of you occurred and concur and are satisfied with the justice of the demand and the process by which the demand shall be enforced. So what you're doing here is this: if they don't respond, you're going to take total control of the whole thing, file in the court, get the sheriff, and go out and get your money. Or have them do whatever it is that you're requiring them to do. Okay, so that's a process.
Well, if they cancel the contracts, which I don't know, you know, if they have or not, there's no money involved. But I'm asking for now that it's been 60 days and they haven't acted, I'm asking them to remove the system.
Listen, you're not getting nowhere with them. You can ask till the cows come home. It's not going to happen. Only the notice and demand is going to make it happen, because in that notice demand is what you're going to put is what you just said. If you don't do this within 30 days, I'm going to hire another contractor to do the job for me. I'm going to have them take out your materials and I'll set them on the sidewalk. You can come and get them, and I'm going to charge you, back charge you for the cost to have all of this removed. Okay, you got to put all of this into your notice and demand, and you have to be very, you know, careful to cover all the bases of the process of this notice and demand, which is there with instructions and an example for you to do. Don't make the phone call. Phone call ain't going to do nothing. Don't send them a letter. The letter ain't going to do nothing.
Oh, no, I never did that. I told them right from the start, everything must be in writing. I never had phone calls.
Well, you haven't gotten it in writing. They come in and you shouldn't even have let them do the work without the writing. But the bottom line, though, is that when you go to all three parties, the other two of those three parties might be totally innocent. They're going to say, whoa. They're going to get involved in this thing. Okay, and that'll be an assistance to you. Once you get this notice and demand out and you make it clear what you require of them.
John, these are big companies. ARS is huge.
I'm just telling you, it doesn't matter how big they are. I'm telling you, bigger they are, that's the one that sold the job, I presume, then. The ANS, you said it is?
ARS. No, okay. the local company was who I originally contacted. But behind them, they are owned by ARS.
Yeah,
and
that's
then
the company.
And
that
then the private equity firm is GoodLeap. They're out of San Francisco. They're huge.
Okay, look, I don't care how big they are. I'm telling you how the law works, how things work, and what you could do. If anything, I know the best of it's construction. I've been involved with, like I said, 40 years. That's my life, okay? And I know how all this works. You got three parties, and I'm going to tell you, when you go after all three parties as if they're all liable, you're going to all of a sudden find allies in that, and then they're going to work with you. They're all going to come down on the contractor that's not doing what they have to do. Okay. Plus, they have to take their materials back, because you can't just take your materials back. You can't remove the materials from your house and set it out on your street without first doing a notice demand or getting permission from them. You're not going to get permission from them, but when you do the notice and demand, now it's become legal. Okay. And I'm going to tell you, before that 30 days is up, you're probably going to make sure you give information, like a phone number, too. Well, actually, let me see. Well, they probably already have your phone number. But
you know, something else I noticed was
that the companies that are not screwing you over here, they're not going to want to get caught up in this web. And they're going to all come down. You're going to find allies now. You're going to find two allies against that subcontractor. That's what you're going to find. But you have to do it right. Now, I just told you how to do it right. And it all works the same thing. I understand that.
I knew from NLA, and I was demand letter was crossing my mind already. Yeah.
Well, you better be very careful and specific on your demand letter. When you write any kind of a legal paper, okay, you struggle to get it together. You do the best you can to get it together. And once you get it all done, you lay it aside for a day or two, then you come back to it. And then you massage it. You'll find that you'll make some changes. You'll make some additions. I forgot to do this. I forgot to put that in. I wasn't clear enough with this. I don't file a paper or serve a paper on anyone if I haven't been through it at least 10 times. And that's not an exaggeration. I'm constantly rereading my work over and over and over again. And that does two things. It perfects my work on the one end, and it gives me a much deeper education on the things that I'm doing. And also the ability to articulate my situation in court if I had to do that, okay, by doing these things properly. So that's what you need to do. Take this notice and demand, start working it out around your situation, and make sure you execute every part of this notice and demand. I believe it's an 8-part system. So you have to execute each one of those 8 parts. Fail for one, it could cause a problem. And you need to serve it on all three. You have to get certificates of service. There's two ways to do it, okay? You can serve it by mail, but you have to have someone to do the service and give you, you know, a paper that they have served it. There's a form that we have you can get on the website also. But the best way to do this is have the sheriff serve it, because that's much more clout, it's much more powerful, and it makes people concerned. People will be calling their lawyers at that point. And I'm going to tell you that...
Does it have to be notarized?
Everything has to be sworn to. It's worthless if you don't swear to it. It doesn't mean anything. It's called hearsay if it's not sworn to. You take it down to the bank and you get it notarized.
Okay.
Okay, that'll solve your problem.
You know, I think in my case, you know, I canceled it within the time frame they specified.
Yeah, can you prove you canceled it?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. They are acknowledging.
How did you cancel it?
I emailed them and told them I want to cancel. And they came back and they said, we received your cancellation. And
would you have all these papers? Let me explain something.
I didn't do anything verbally. I did not do anything verbally.
But it has to be sworn to. It has to be a certified piece of paper that has weight in a courtroom. And if you don't have that weight, then it's what's called hearsay. It means nothing. It has no value.
According to their contract, they just said I had to notify them in writing.
Hold on. They could say anything they want, but again, you have to prove that you send it, and you send it by email. Okay?
I have it, yeah. And they acknowledge it.
I'm just telling you the reality of life and how things work. I'm going to tell you some things in court are not going to stand up. Let me explain something. And in my ignorance many, many years ago, you know, I would go in and I'd have pictures and everything and bring it into the courtroom. Usually, you know, it's a small claims, usually, you know, in some small contract or whatever the case may be. And I'd find that I didn't get anywhere. And they come in with a lawyer and I lose. But I found out there are certain things that the judge isn't going to tell you this, but those pictures have to be sworn to. They have to be what's called certified. So therefore, the person who took those pictures has to write a paper and has to have it notarized saying, I took this picture. They have to identify the pictures, maybe give them numbers or whatever the case may be. I took them on a certain date at a certain time, and then you get that paper together. Then they have to get it notarized. You go to a bank.
I canceled it, and they're saying repeatedly that they want to set up removing the equipment. But what happens is they don't do it.
Okay, I'm going to tell you one more time. It doesn't matter what you do. They're going to lose money coming out to do it, so they're going to drag it as long as they can. Maybe they're going through
financial problems. Hold on.
Maybe they're going through financial problems and they can't get out there. But I'm going to tell you right now that if you do a notice and demand to all three people involved, I'm going to tell you, you're going to find allies, and these people are going to come out and do what you want and move on. But if you don't do it that way, you're going to waste your time. Like you said,
I understand fully what you're saying. I just have to get it done, I guess. I did the 22-page complaint, so it's not like I've been twiddling my
It's not going to go anywhere unless you make it go somewhere. You have to put a fire underneath these people, and that's the fire I'm giving you. It's going to cost you $30 or so. I don't know what the sheriff's going to charge.
I've had
it as cheap as, you know, $25, and I've had it as expensive.
Yeah,
as
I'm not concerned about that.
But what I'm saying is, I'm telling you, when the sheriff shows up at a place of business with a paper and serves an individual, I'm telling you, they want to know what's going on, and they're going to read it. And when they read that there's a time thing here, and you're going to make all the decisions for them, and this is what you're going to do, and you lay it all out, they only have to respond.
Is all that in the demand example?
Right here. I told you that. You're on a phone.
No, I've seen it before.
With an instruction. There's one page instruction, and there is a generic verify notice and demand.
What I'm concerned about is what do I put in there for my particular situation, you know.
That's the story. You put in the problems and the situation and your expectation and what you demand them to do. And if they don't do it, you're going to decide for them what is right and what the penalty is going to be and everything else. Let me tell you, the insurance company, I mean, the financial company will understand this very quickly, okay? And the company that sold the product to you, they'll probably never use that subcontractor again. But they don't want to get lost in this because they've already sold out. They're gone. As far as they're concerned, they're paid and finished by somebody, probably from the – well, again, I don't know how all that worked, because if you didn't sign any kind of a check over to these people, then either, and I don't know why they would come out and do the work with at least getting some money up front for the materials and then a piece of money maybe at the end or the job, depending on the length of job.
Because it's all high pressure. It's all
Did money probably changed hands is what I'm saying. They probably got a check. I have never seen, 40 years I was in this business, I have never seen any kind of a financial institution give money to either the contractor or the individual. They make it a two-party check, and it's delivered to you. It's always been that way. I've never seen anything else other. Okay? So that means the check somehow probably went out, and they signed your name. That's fraud, and that's big, big leverage on these people to make it.
The one thing that happened was when I was dealing with Lowe's, they told me $10,000. And then they ghosted me for the furnace. And then when I tried to go this route again, same company, don't, you know, ARS, same company, they're charging me $13,000 now for a lesser model.
Define ghosting.
They just totally gave me the runaround. They were saying they needed to come back out here, and I never could get them to come back out here.
They just totally
ghosted me.
Look, if it was Lowe's, you go down to the contractor's desk, okay, and then you get the management of that contractor's desk is the person you're going to deal with because you got a problem. Okay, and they're going to deal with that problem. That's a big company, and they can't afford to be going through losing money like this and dealing with subcontractors, gives them a bad name, and so on and so forth. Believe me, they're going to get rid of that subcontractor. But you didn't use Lowe's.
When they told me they use ARS, I tried to use a different company, but there's none. There's none you can go to.
Okay, you could have just went to a regular, heating contractor, local.
No, that's what I'm telling you.
Why not?
You never know who you're dealing with. They've all been bought out.
And you would find out who you're dealing with. Look at anybody that's, phone books aren't around anymore. You know, everything's on the internet, and that makes everything really problematic because you don't know who you're dealing with. But they should have an address and a phone number, and you give them a call and you make an appointment. I'm coming down to see you. They're not coming to you. No, I'm going to come down to see you.
What you don't know is they're owned by these big conglomerates, you know?
Well, you ask them if they are.
You would have to do extensive research before...
You ask them. If they lie, that's fraud. If you get stuck in a situation... You know, look, if it's that big a situation and that big a concern, you should have a tape recorder. And you can even tell them, look, I'm going to record this conversation. You know, or you just... Look, as long as you are... What state are you in again? You're in...
Virginia.
I know there's a couple of states that you can't privately... record. I know here in New York and most states.
It's shady gray here.
What does that mean? Can you record or not?
It's shady gray.
Okay, let me explain. No. Let me explain something. Okay, you can look this up on your own state. You can go to and you can look and just run a law question. Matter of fact, you can run this question in Grok or some AI, and you give them the basic details of what Grok needs to know. But here's the question, okay? In my state, if I record, can I record a conversation that I am part of without letting anyone know? In most states, you can. As long as you are part of...
There was a big case here. It was a big political case. And it was a woman, and she recorded this person. And it was always a contention of, she could have been, they could have went after her for recording it. The laws here are shady
again,
gray.
I don't know the laws of your state, okay? I already told you that. You have to look to find out. And let me tell you, I wouldn't rely too much on stories, okay, because there's a lot of BS out there. But it's a very simple, I'll tell you what, if you went in to just Googled it, you'd probably say, is it lawful for me, if I'm part of a conversation, to record that conversation without them knowing? Go to an AI. Do you got Grok? Go to Grok.
No, I don't have any. I haven't used Grok. No.
Well, do you have an AI?
It's not clear. I can tell you, it's not clear cut here. It's not. It's just not.
It's either the law or it's not. If there is no law saying you can't do it, you might even find a law saying you can do it. But if there's no law you can't do it, then there's no law that you can't do it. It's that simple. It doesn't get any more difficult than that. That's the law. Okay, look, this is common law that we're under. Now, of course, they put us under civil law, so that's problematic. So you got to go find out if there's anything in civil law concerning the fact of having a conversation, recorded without others knowing, as long as you're part of that. And I'm going to tell you right now, as much as I hate AI, AI is a problem. It's destructive, and also it maintains status quo in certain areas. Okay, and with that said, though, I'm telling you, it is a great tool. I've gone and asked Grok, for instance, all kinds of questions, all kinds of info. And I'll tell you what, as long as you're not going up against the status quo, because that's where the problem begins, you know, they give you great answers, and you get a lot of information, details you wouldn't get anywhere else. It's really impressive. I've written 14 books. And of the books I've written, all my books are personal. I've researched everything out. Before I wrote my first book, I've had 12, 13 years of research already in, okay? And so it took me a long time to do that. But a lot, I could have cut my 13 years down literally to less than a year if I had Grok, okay? Because it's so impressive and give you so much information. It's so informative. And if you don't, you know, you also can ask inside questions, more questions concerning, or be more specific, or whatever the case may be. So what I'm trying to tell you is this.
I think you have to have consent of the other party in Virginia.
You can think all you want. You should know. You can think all you want. You can guess.
I've looked it up before. I know what it was before. Whether it's changed or not, I don't know, you know.
Well, let me tell you something. It's not what you don't know that's going to get you. It's what you think you know and ain't so. That's what's going to get you. You're not getting anywhere because you're not looking for the answer. It'll take you 10 minutes to get the answer to the question, and you'll know. Get the answer to the question. By the way, we don't have anybody else in the queue. If anybody else wants to get into the queue on a phone, *6 and 1.
This is what one thing says. The law on recording conversations in Virginia is pretty clear. We're a one-party consent state.
Say this again.
The law in Virginia is pretty clear. We are a one-party consent state.
Okay, who says that?
A law firm?
No, big deal. Doesn't mean anything. What you need to do is go to the law. What do you care what a lawyer says?
Yes, so as long as one of you is cool with it, it is legal.
They're not even being clear on what they're saying. Look, if I am in that conversation and I have a recorder and I stick it in my top pocket and I push that button and I'm having a conversation with 20 people, okay, I can use that in a court of law. It's lawful. That's in New York State. That's a fact. Most states are lawful, but there are some states that it's not. So as long as... Now, you can't record a conversation if you're not part of that conversation. That's a whole different story. And I don't even know what that lawyer is saying. They always talk in riddles anyway.
I wish I could remember that case. I remember the woman. She was very... She was very famous because she recorded. You know what? I think it's Bill Clinton. Yeah. Oh yeah, it is. It's Bill Clinton, and what was the intern he was with?
I don't know.
That was it. And she lived. This woman lived in Virginia, so that woman recorded the intern.
Well, yeah, but.
Implicating Bill Clinton, and there was this big controversy about recording it.
Hold it. Was the intern that was recorded on a phone? Was it in? That's a whole different story there too.
It might have been. I don't know. I just can't remember.
I'm trying to help you, but you're not listening. Okay, go find the law. It's that simple. It's not a big thing to find the law. Go to a search engine and put in what is the law on recording a conversation if you're part of that conversation. Okay? It's that simple. And make sure you put your state in there. It's better off going to an AI because you can put two or three sentences in there and you'll get a really good solid answer back. But, you know, you're looking for a law concerning recording a conversation. That's what you're looking. You know, if they were in Washington when they recorded people are in another state.
Her name was Linda Tripp, and it was Monica Lewinsky that was the intern.
When was it recorded? Where was it recorded? It was on a phone? And where were the two people that were on the phone if it was on the phone? They were in two different states? You see, you got a problem here now. Plus, recording a phone call, again, that could be
She began secretly recording phone conversations.
Okay. When and where?
I don't know.
Okay, well, then you have nothing.
What I'm saying, though, is there was this big controversy about her being able to record the conversation and whether it could be admitted in court.
What I'm trying to say to you is you're just restricting yourself because you're not going out to find the facts of the state where you're living in. That's what your problem is, okay? That's what you need to do. If you're recording someone that's in another state that has a different law, there could be, you know, that becomes a problem now. That becomes a legal argument, okay? You need to know where you're at, what you're doing, and you need to know the law concerning that. It's that simple. This is not difficult. You can get the answer in 5 or 10 minutes. I'm telling you right now. You go to an AI, you'll get an answer in less than 10 minutes. You get a minute. You'll spend more time asking the question than getting the answer. The answer will be in 20 seconds. You'll have the answer once you put the question in. But you have to be specific with the question. You're in this state, whatever the state it is. You're having a conversation with one, two, or three people. I'm recording that conversation privately. They don't know about it. Okay, is it lawful? And I'm telling you, you'll get an answer. And it'll give you different things. Well, if you're on a phone and this person is there, or if you're this or that, or, you know, there'll be different things, okay? But generally speaking, okay, I know I can record anyone in this state, and it'll hold up in a court of law, and I could do it privately, whether I'm on the phone or in person. As long as I'm part of that conversation. It's that simple. So anyway.
Well, okay. All right. Well, I think.
The notice and demand, and that's the that's.
I think the notice and demand is the next.
That's your only solution.
I think you're right.
It could have been your first step, but you didn't realize it. But look, that's the only solution you have other than calling a lawyer and giving them a lot of money.
No, I think I filed the complaint with all those places because...
Yeah, that's fine, you know, that you filed a complaint and you can have that if you have to go...
People need to know what's going on. They need to know when they go to buy something for their home, it's not just a matter of... Like we used to just be able to go out and buy it, you know?
Well, you know, whenever you do business, you should go to the Better Business Bureau concerning the person you're going to do business with and see if there's anything on the record there. Usually, if there's nothing on the record, there's a good chance 90 or 95% you're not going to have any problems. But if they are a problematic person... And you do get a lot of problematic contractors. Let me tell you, you get a lot of really problematic contractors. But they'll show up on the Better Business Bureau because people will be making complaints. So that's what I would do. Okay, that's all I can offer for you. A notice and demand is the best way to go. I suggest you follow the procedure and process we have up on our website. Do you need me to tell you where it's located at again?
No, I wrote it down.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, I appreciate that. It's you have basically redirected me probably in the right direction. So.
Oh, no doubt about it. That's absolute. This is the best way to go. You know, after this, it's going to court if you have to do it. But
that's what I'm trying to avoid. I am trying to avoid that.
Someone got money because they've already installed the thing. Somebody got money, okay, and they got it unlawfully if you didn't sign a check. I've never heard of it being a one-party check direct to the conscience. Never. Over 40 years in business, never heard of it. Okay.
Yeah, but what about the no interest loan? Oh, and I didn't even need it. This is just really ridiculous.
Well, again, people sometimes do things without thinking, and that's what you did.
You know how when you buy a car, they want you to finance it, and that's the kind of pressure it is. Like you think that, well, if I don't do this, they're not going to do business with me. I'm going to get ghosted again. That's exactly what I thought.
What does ghost mean? I'm not sure I understand that. What is ghosted?
Did they just disappear?
Oh, okay. Well, again, you go down to their office. If you're going to spend big money, you need to know where these people live, so to speak. You need to know where they're at.
You can't.
Go down,
there are no...
There's got to be... plumbing contractors in your town or in your county. They're all over the place. Okay, you should have went directly to a plumbing contractor, HVAC heating, HVAC contractor.
They're all owned by these big.
No, they're not all owned. Maybe a lot.
Well, finding the one that isn't is like looking for a needle in a haystack now.
Well, what you're doing, what you may be seeing and not realizing is that they were pulling a lot of subcontracting work to fill the gaps up, especially during down times. And then,
I think they're using illegals. That's what I've, because I don't know. There were just indications of that.
All right. Well, anyway, that's the best I can tell you. And notice and demand is the way to go.
Yeah, I think so.
And hopefully you don't have to go any further than that. And when you hold going after three parties and one party's in trouble, you're going to find allies.
That's an interesting point. Because if it is ARS and this big private equity group and the local company, somehow they're
right,
not doing what they're supposed to do.
Okay, we only got about 8 minutes left and a few things I want to do before we close down, unless someone comes.
All right. Thank you. Thank you for your advice once again.
Thank you.
Okay.
All right, if anybody wants to get into the queue, we do have about 80 minutes. But just real quickly, a couple of things I'd like to cover or bring to the surface here. Let's see. I had some notes here. Oh, okay. Yeah, we're looking to maybe get some interviews from podcasters or, some radio programs or anything. So if anybody can help us out with that, if they can make a connection with maybe a podcaster, that we might be able to get our name and word out there of what we're doing, that would be really helpful. We need to hit critical mass. We've been approaching 12,000 members for quite some time, so things have slowed down in the sense of membership. But we're close to 12,000 members. But we need really, in order for us to accomplish the goals that we really would like to accomplish, we do need to get critical mass going. Now, we did send some papers recently, out to the president. I know we covered this. I think it was a 16-page paper, which we had read online a while back, maybe a month ago or so. And then I rewrote that and added a lot more. It came out to be 30-some-odd pages. I started reading some of that, but I never got through all of it. We do have a video on video on that. Let me see. Today, I guess I might find it here. I just updated this area. Okay, the paper we wrote was an extraordinary presentment to President Trump and his administration. So if people want to listen to that, let me tell you how you can get to that. You can go to today's issues, come down to NLA Monday Open Forum videos, And if you click over here to play the videos, you click on that and you'll come to our YouTube page. And right now it's a second down. I mean, we'll be putting a video up tonight, so it'll be three down. But if you click on this extraordinary presentment to President Trump, it's an hour and 13 minutes, so you can kind of sit down and hear it.
This is an extraordinary presentment.
Let me pause that. Also, you can read along with it if you go to our main page here, front page. It should be the top one, extraordinary presentment to President Donald Trump and his cabinet. And I believe it's a real powerful paper. We've been communicating with his administration, with President Trump and his administration for quite some time. We've sent them about five different presentments over the years. And this is the latest one. We're really trying to educate his administration as to what natural law actually really is, the law of the land. And so it's a pretty big, long paper. Again, it took about an hour and 15 minutes to read it, again, on that video. But you can read along with it, or you can just read it on your own. I think it's a powerful paper. I think it's a paper that will be very helpful to people for learning the common law and who we are as a people and the history of how our law system ultimately had been put together, who we are as a people. You know, we're not under Roman law, we're under natural law. Natural law comes from the Bible, that's who we are. We're fashioned under Israel, not under Rome. When you go to bar school, you know, to learn law, they're going to teach you that we're under Roman law, we're fashioned under Rome, and that trial court decisions is the common law that they talk about. And they lie about so much. I mean, it's unbelievable. We do uncover those lies in this paper, at least to a small degree. But I'm thinking now, what I'm going to do is I'm thinking of filing a paper, doing it personally instead of through the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, but just suing, you know, by myself directly in, because to get a lawsuit under the title of Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, that's going to be kicked out. There's no doubt in my mind about it, so I don't want to waste my time with that. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to do it personally, my person, one person, directly in challenging an unconstitutional law, which is the abrogation of the law of the land. And I'm going to try to take it. It's not going to be able to be settled in the federal courts. They'll have to kick it to, you know, the higher courts. I don't think we might get a decision from an appellate court or a court of appeals. It's possible. If it's not the way we want to go, of course, we'll appeal it and move it up the line. But I think it'll have to go up to the United States Supreme Court. Now, it's a case that is so serious that a whole judicial system rests upon this case to get it back or not, because right now we've lost it. And that's the point of the case I'm trying to make. And so for them not to hear it would be, you know, it would be writing reams of information that they just have no intention on giving back the courts back to the people. I'm planning on doing this lawsuit. It may take a week or two before I can write the papers up. I'll share them on a Monday night program. You know, go through the process. I'll probably copy to President Trump and his cabinet. I'm not sure exactly how I would do that. I'd like to do it under the title of Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, maybe as a presentment for information about this court case. I'm not sure how I would couch all that, but I'm thinking of doing that, and I think we might be able to get something out of this. You know, we are trying to bring this, bring back the United States of America back to a republic again. I do believe that majority of the United States Supreme Court is in line with that. They do realize, they know the truth, they know the problems. Once we expose the problems on paper and file it in a court, I think they'll have to address it. Maybe we're ready for that. Maybe they're ready for that. Maybe they are ready to say we got to bring this judicial process back where it belongs, because there's too many rogue judges out there that think that they can make all decisions, and they can't make any of the decisions that they've been making, especially when it comes to Trump and his administration and what's going on there. None of them. They don't have the power. They don't have the authority. By what authority do they act? They can't tell us, because they don't have the authority. But anyway, that's something I'm thinking on doing, and I'll be putting it out. Now, we've asked from time to time. I probably should ask every Monday after we kind of make the introduction, to ask and request that people bring guests to our Monday night meeting. We need to grow. Again, we need to get to the critical mass in order to accomplish the goals, and we have a lot of goals. And the things that we are doing, we could do a lot stronger and a lot faster if we were professional. You know, this is we're all volunteers, okay? And if we can get to become professional, then we can really do a lot of work and get a lot more done and get things done a lot quicker. Because things are dragging on, and it's taking time, but we need to move faster. And the only way we could do that is one of two ways. If we hit critical mass, and if a good percentage of those people give us $5 a month or more, you will have plenty of money to be able to go professional and pay people, and people will be working full time, making better connections down to the committees of safety that we're building. Making contact with those people, assisting them in any way that they would like us to help, and so on and so forth. Also, it'll help us. Money is necessary to file papers, to move things through the courts, and to do all kinds of things. You know, we also would like to get some textbooks going from K through 12, which will teach our children the things that they should know. That we are a Christian nation. We were founded on Christian principles, that we're under natural law, which comes from the Bible. The laws are written in our hearts. And how this nation came together, and that we're a republic, and what a republic exactly is. And they need to understand that. They need to understand civics. They need to understand the Constitution. Everyone should be able to walk into a courtroom and file papers, at least to move a court case. Everybody should know how to do that, because our heritage is in the law, and our inheritance is liberty. And so if you don't know about your heritage, you don't really know how to protect or how to have, and a lot of liberties that you don't even realize you have. And also knowledge in these areas, you'll be able to see when they're breaking the law. I'm talking about the people that we elected to maybe write law, and the court systems, the whole political process. How can you know when they're violating the Constitution if you don't know the Constitution? They don't even know the Constitution. And we need to require them. Committees of safety should be helping people to get into office, you know, by walking their papers, because someone needs to walk their papers. And that's a pretty powerful position to be in. If you're putting people into office, that's power. Because you can put them into office, you can take them out of office. Because you could do a recall, or you can not support them on the next election around if they're not going to be obedient to the Constitution. But if they don't know the Constitution, they're not going to be obedient to the Constitution. If you don't know the Constitution, you don't know when they're breaking the Constitution, violating their powers and authorities, taking on more powers. Just think about this. They took over our courts. They abrogated common law. They abrogated the law, not only the common law, but they abrogated the rules of common law. Okay? And by what power, what authority did Congress have? That's an additional power. It's forbidden by the 10th Amendment. Because any newfound power needs to go down to the states or the people. But it's not a newfound power, because it's a fraud. And they stole our courts. They robbed the people. And so they didn't have the power or authority to give any authority to the Supreme Court to write their own rules, thereby abrogating the rules of common law, or the rules of natural law. And so these things need to be addressed. People need to know these things. We need to teach our children these things, and we need to exercise the knowledge that we get from knowing these things. We need to get involved on our county level, on the grassroots levels, and committees of safety. Some people need to, go out and get educated. We'll provide that education free of charge, you know, to become administrators for the juries, the grand juries, and the trial juries. If we don't take it back, then they're just going to continue to control it. The judges and the bar attorneys control it, and they've brought us under civil law. We need to get out from underneath that. Okay, anyway, with that, we've come to the end of our program here tonight. So,
John?
Yeah, go ahead.
I have not been able to get a hold of Gerard. That number that I have for him is just busy.
Oh, yeah, thank you. I'll call you in the morning. I'll call him, and I'll call you in the morning, too, and give you the number so you have it.
Okay, great. Thank
you. And we'll talk a little bit about it. I'm going to be talking with Terry tomorrow at about 9 a.m. Our time. Maybe Terry can pull you into the call, and we can share that information, because I need to deal with the email, move all the emails from the one base to the other base, because I got to get away from these people, everything out of there, you know?
Okay,
so 9 o'clock, I'll tell Terry, you give a call to Terry if you want. I don't know if you're on the line right now, but if not, I'll make mention when we get the call going. We'll probably be on her Zoom call, okay?
Okay, see you tomorrow.
I'm here. I'm listening.
Okay, so you pull us both in tomorrow. Okay, Terry?
You go what in tomorrow?
At 9 o'clock, we have that meeting. We'll pull Dan in.
Yes, we do.
Okay, and I'll try to get a hold of Gerard. Matter of fact, I'll try to call him once I end this call.
Okay.
Okay, he's up. I know he's a late one, too. So.
Okay.
All right, good night, everybody. Lord willing, we'll see you next Monday. And anybody interested, we have Bible studies on Wednesday evenings at 7:30 Eastern Time. And it's in this room here, so anybody joins in on at 7:30, you'll be in the Bible study. Okay, and I think this week's Bible study is going to be on cherubims. You know, not many people really know what a cherubim is in the Bible. Okay, good night, everybody.